This is the fifth day of this June 2011 seven-day session. And we will continue reading and commenting from the book Catching a Feather on a Fan by Sheng Yan. Sheng Yan continues, there is also another method which I do not usually recommend to beginners. A method for the advanced Zen student. It requires a measure of prior practice. This is the method of the Zaodong school, Soto in Japanese, advocated particularly by Hung Zhe in the 11th century. This was the method favored by the great Japanese master Dogen, who took it to that country where it is known as Shikantaza. Actually, it is probably a very ancient method going back to the times of the Indian patriarchs. You might say it is Zan investigating without the huato, without the koan, as a target. Investigating without a target. You sit gazing silently into experience as it arises. Let's repeat that. You sit gazing silently into experience as it arises. Hung Zhe said of it, in this silent sitting, whatever realms may appear, the mind is very clear as to the details, yet everything is where it originally is, in its own place. The mind stays on one thought for 1,000 years, yet does not dwell on any forms, inside or outside. Not dwelling on any forms, neither inside nor outside. In this method, we let the mind go quieter and quieter, immersing itself in its own silence. It is like allowing the water of a pool to become utterly still. Every speck of mud drifts to the bottom, and the water is crystalline in its clarity. This crystalline clarity becomes awakening naturally and without effort. Like the method of koan, this is a wonderfully direct path. As you see, no knowledge, no attainment. It seems at first that it's very different from koan practice, but fundamentally it is not. It is different in that the mind is used in a different way. In koan practice, we use the koan like a laser pointer, one pointedness. Shining through everything, whatever arises, thoughts, emotions, phenomena, inside, outside. Whereas with this Shikantaza practice, we widen the angle. It has been compared to koan practice has been compared to driving cattle through a narrow opening. And shikantaza is letting the cattle graze on wide, wide pastures. But really, fundamentally, there's no difference. Both methods have in common the awareness, working with the awareness, attention. Continues on a different talk. Many people suffer from feelings of inferiority. Others feel themselves to be very important. They exaggerate their self-respect into aggrandizement. Both of these feelings arise from comparing oneself with others. I do not know how modern psychology analyzes these feelings, but from the viewpoint of the Buddha Dharma, each of these feelings is a different manifestation of the same basic inclination. A person who feels inferior is obviously lacking in confidence, but so is somebody who exaggerates his or her importance and behaves arrogantly. Both inferiority and superiority come from lack of confidence. You cannot practice well if you lack confidence. You look at others and think how well they must be getting on. You feel as if nobody else has a problem, as if you were the only one sitting there worrying and being anxious. I see that many of us recognize such problems. The fact that we can perceive them is already a sign of progress. Of course, there are also people who never try to resolve difficulties. They like to evade a difficult situation as much as possible. Such a person is like the ostrich sticking its head in the sand and hoping the lion will go away. Have you not met the man who is approaching 30 and begins to lose his hair? So, in case others should notice, he begins combing his hair in such a way that the hair on the left side goes over to the right. Yet, anyone who really takes a look can see at once that he is bald in the center. Of course, if you are a Chan practitioner and you are bald in the center, well, you are bald in the center. No fuss, no pretense. The practice of Chan involves training in patience, in determination. It requires the development of the will. That's a tricky one, the development of the will. It's not exactly a matter of willpower, and definitely it's not having your own way. It's more the kind of development of will that comes from practice. Sometimes we feel weak when we start practice. And with continuous practice, we get stronger. We are not thrown by our thoughts, anxieties, fears, frustrations. In fact, that's one of the points that differentiate the beginner from the experienced sitter. For a beginner, it is new to face thoughts, for example. The experienced sitter knows that they're just thoughts. And even when thrown off one's track by upcoming things, it doesn't take so long to get back to the practice. Okay, you can say, I've been here before, I know this is just a passing mind state, get back to the practice. We do not get enmeshed, we don't get entangled in fantasies so long. So, with practice, you develop will, a certain fearlessness, sitting upright, not leaning on anything, facing whatever comes, like it's just like a breeze in your face. Memories, relationships, biographical issues, decisions that had to be taken, decisions one could maybe not influence in one's life. It's just a breeze touching your forehead. Insubstantial. The purpose of practice, Shengen continues, is to free ourselves from the self, to go beyond attachments to the self. If we are seeking rapid results, seeking to gratify ourselves in reaching some goal or some attainment, then this is the opposite of the purpose of Chan. If we get anxious because there appears to be no result from practice, we are making a mistake. In Chan, trying to make progress ensures no progress. This is paradoxical, but nevertheless, it's true. If you're trying to reach a certain place, this is the greatest hindrance. If you're trying to recollect a place that you had been maybe in a previous session, this will hinder progress. Even to have had a deep samadhi state, it can be inspiring to have experienced this. Yes, I am not exempt. This is true. I can reach that state, but if you cling to it, you will definitely lose it. Same with other attainments, insights, awakenings. Let us return once more to the analogy of the feather and the fan. Before you can get any result from your practice, you have to hold the fan in a very stable and peaceful manner. And if the feather does end up on your fan, it is important not to get excited. If you get too happy, there will be a slight stir of your hand and the feather will be gone. The question is, when will the feather drop on your fan and never fly away again? As long as there is an idea of attainment in which you imagine something and want it, the feather will keep floating away. In fact, the problem will last just as long as the feather and the fan exist for you. Only when there is no person seeking an attainment and no attainment to be realized will the ultimate solution arise. It's the same with working on Mu. Trying to get somewhere will lead you away. The same when you're not completely one with your practice. It's like there's you, there's the practice, and then there's the process of concentrating, focusing on the practice. So there's actually three entities. And it gets even worse when you divide yourself into someone watching this process while you are doing this practice. Then there are four entities. That's why judging, evaluating is so devilish when you're practicing. Of course, we need to evaluate, judge certain things in daily life. We have to make decisions every day. But there's a different way of working on your koan. Not judging, not evaluating, just looking into Mu. Or who, or the breath. And when you do that wholeheartedly, then Mu will look at you. It's possible that Mu can work on you. All you have to do is open yourself up and wholeheartedly with all your pores, all the hairs of your skin, with everything, turn towards Mu. of course, you cannot answer this question, what is Mu, or who am I, or who, or what is it, what? You cannot answer it intellectually. But having heard and seen that others could answer this question, there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to do this. Raquin says, from the very beginning, all beings are Buddha. Is he joking? Is he leading us astray? Did he have a good day where he composed this verse, and other days he might not see it this way? Or is he right? That from the very beginning we are all whole and complete. Nothing lacking. Fundamentally, no defilements. Fundamentally, no striving. With things just being what they are. Shengyan says, in Buddhism, there is a saying that monks should never be afraid of getting old, because when they are truly antique, they will be treated like treasure. People think a monk has a deep practice because he has meditated for so many years, so they respect him and make him into a jewel. A wise old master might even receive a title, national treasure. Naturally, once you are a national treasure, you are very close to death. By the time everyone is listening to you, you will not have many days more in this life. To be afraid of death and to cling to life is actually useless. You have to appreciate that birth and death are not two separate things. The day you are born, you are already starting to get closer to death, moment by moment. With birth, there's always death. Birth implies death. Only when there is no birth can there be no death. The Chan practitioner must come to realize that wandering thoughts and illusory intellection are the very stuff of birth and death. Only when illusory thinking is cut off completely will there be no more birth and death. When all illusory thoughts of self-perpetuation and the vexation that such thoughts maintain are finally cut off, all that is left is wisdom. Wisdom means the comprehension of emptiness. In emptiness, all comings and goings are seen to be aspects of the same process, the interdependent origination of all things. Coming and going, birth and death are not separate. They are one. To be afraid of death is to maintain illusion. The question is, can you, the practitioner, practice to the point where illusory thought and vexations are cut off? We cling to life. We are afraid of death. This is normal, for we want to stay young. We do not want to grow old. Of course, it is impossible. Even if you do not want to die, eventually you will do so. Thinking of these events in time attaches us to the products of time. It is the thought that generates the pain. In our practice, we go beyond thought into the continuous present. As you enter that sphere, all fears of birth and death, of moment to moment, of one thought following another, are completely cut off. This brings us to the end of this retreat, the accounts of this retreat, and I will say something about these hindrances that we encounter again and again, round after round, sesshin after sesshin. What are these hindrances? In classical Buddhism, there are five of them. You might say, oh, I have 25. They've been around for a long time, and it has been written about them in the Buddhist tradition for the past 2,000 years and more. There are five. They are translated in different ways. But in fact, there are two pairs and one extra one. And the two pairs are desire and aversion. Or aversion, sometimes translated as ill will or malice. And the second pair is depression or laziness and wildness or excitement or restlessness. So they are opposites. Desire, aversions, depression, restlessness. And the fifth one is skeptical doubt. If you say, I am not familiar with any of these, I don't know, I've never encountered them, don't know what you're talking about, then you might not be a human being. If you say, oh yes, I know all of them, you might be more advanced in your practice than you think you are. In the sutras, they have been compared with different qualities of water. So, the first one, the desire, is water that is mixed with colors, different colors in the water. The aversion or the ill will is compared to boiling water, hot. The depression or laziness has been compared to water that is covered by moss. The excitement, wildness or restlessness was compared to water that is whipped by wind, storms, moving water, raging waters, lots of waves. And the skeptical doubt was compared to muddy water. So in all these five qualities of water, you can't see clearly. You can't see through the water to the ground. You also cannot see that mirror image when looking into the water. It's unclear. It doesn't have this crystalline clarity that Shengyan speaks of. So, with the desire, we have whole industries, advertisements that try to get us, hook us up with this desire, things we think we need or things we want, things we are told we should have. But also, maybe there are times when we have faced hindrances when they did not seem like hindrances. If I could only have a little more of this, then everything would be fine. Could be wrong. Only a little more skepticism and I would be right and have my way. It says, there's a saying, water which is too pure has no fish. Or, that in the similar vein, dragons do not live in shallow waters. These hindrances are often the stuff that fills our time on the mat, and it's so simple. Of course it's not easy, but it is simple. We just have to see them for what they are: mind states. States that have to be looked through, seen through, that have to be recognized for what they are, and then they will lose their power over us. If you pay too much attention to them, it It's like we are inviting an unwelcome guest into our house, and then it's hard to get rid of them. Sometimes these guests move into the house and stay, as though they own the house. Get some air in, open the windows, let them, don't pay attention to them, let them go. Let them go. Let all mind states go. Decondition yourself with the practice. Maybe we're feeling stuck at a certain place. Okay, I'm stuck. The problem arises when you say, oh, I'm so stuck as you have never seen. I'm the stuckest. This is a special stuckness. My stuckness is different from others. You see how we are separating ourselves? Sesshin is such a wonderful opportunity to move with everything, to move with a schedule, not separating yourself. Everyone is stuck at some point. Question is whether you let the stuckness take over, or whether you sit down and you say, okay, I'm a grown-up person. What is going on here? I came here not to celebrate my stuckness. I came here to work on my practice. So, in fact, all it takes is like the moving of an eyelid, opening or closing the eye, or the motion of the eyeballs away from the stuckness to the practice. Again and again, returning again and again. Returning home. And that leads through the unknown. We have to open us to the unknown, that which we don't know, we don't control. We don't have any power over from our small self view. But we have to surrender. Let go your hand. Let go your hold on the cliff, it says in the Mumonkan. And it also says because it is so very clear, it takes so long to realize. To start going, taking the first steps into this unknown is not easy, and it requires getting up. It requires nakedly facing yourself. It's been said before that Sesshin is a protected environment. I cannot imagine of any other institution where you have this wonderful opportunity to work on yourself with others in this focused way that enables us to look at ourselves without being distracted. At this point, everyone knows their jobs, they know their rooms, they know their places, they know the schedule. Nothing you have to worry about. You just go with everyone else. Nothing in the way except these hindrances, except our thoughts that take us away from this moment, this practice, this seat. Don't be afraid of making mistakes. There are no mistakes. Being afraid of making mistakes brings in a sense of self. It's not called for at this point. All you need to do is stick your head, stick your nose into this practice. Jump into this practice with your whole body. It's like diving into a pool of clear water. Not just sticking your toe in to see what the temperature is like, but going all the way. And when you jump, there's a moment that you have no control. You go with the movement. When you lose your foothold, give up your foothold. Jump into this new reality, investigating, digging. Probing. Embracing. Our time is up. We stop here and recite the four vows.